everyone, and by everyone, I mean the five people that are listening to this podcast. This is Matt Kinney, and welcome back to, this is episode 10 of the Matt and Joe Woodworking Fun Hour.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's Joe, of course, and I'm Matt, and the whole premise here is that I'm teaching Joe, helping Joe learn to woodwork. And as we go through the process of right now, Joe's making a tea cabinet and I'm making a tea cabinet.
Yep.
And we're just discussing
dueling tea cabinets.
And we're discussing I'm teaching Joe different techniques and so forth as he makes his cabinet. So before we jump into that,
what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I guess since the last time we recorded an episode, I taught a class at one of my favorite places is Piers Valley Craft School, which is in New Jersey, in the Delaware River Water Gap National Recreation Area. It's a fantastic place. They have blacksmithing, ceramics, photography, textiles, metalsmithing, all these different crafts going on at the same time. And I always get inspired when I'm there. I love it.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I did that. And, actually, today, Friday, the day this comes out, I am driving up to Warren, Maine to teach a weekend class at Lee Nielsen. That's going to be Kumiko with hand tools.
Sold out. No spots left.
All right. Yeah, sold out. And
I might have to send you a wish list if you get a discount.
Oh.
Bring me back some stuff. I'll pay you, obviously.
I'm sure they only give you the
same discount that they give
everybody else. And I've just been working in the shop, you know. Today in the shop, I made two tiny little Kumiko, not panels, but just a single Asanoha for each one. They were 1 3/8 inch square.
So were you just messing around, or are those for something?
So when I was at Peters Valley, I met a jeweler from New York named Corey Burns, and she asked me how small I could make a little Kumiko thing.
Yeah.
And I thought I could make it about an inch square, and that's probably pushing it because the final piece that goes in already
was tiny.
And if you were to go down to 1 inch, it would just be so small. I don't think I could hold it with my fingers and pair it. But so I made it, and she's going to make them into jewelry. I know what kind it is, but I'm not going to say. And it's like the beginning of a collaboration, I hope, because
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
So we're going to do that. She's going to do the metal around it, and she's a metal, you know, jeweler, a metalsmith.
Sweet.
Yeah, does cool work.
I am on vacation this week,
yeah.
But I didn't go anywhere, and I decided to do a walkway at home and just hang out with my kids. That's their first, my older one's first week of school or out of school, so I think my wife is.
Which decision did you regret more, the walkway or hanging out with your kids?
Not hanging out with my kids at all, but I did not plan it accordingly when I asked for the time off, because I asked for time off and immediately was like, oh shit, that's the last, like, school ended last week. I'm like, dang it. So,
oh, yeah.
Not that I didn't want to be with them, it's just, it's kind of chaos and everything's getting back to, like, everything's kind of going into the summer months. My wife's a teacher, so she's at home too, but it's nutty. So,
yeah.
The walkway was a lot of work.
All right. Well, so since the last episode we had was, you know, basically rip and flip.
Yep.
You glued up your panels.
They look awesome. My wife actually stopped in the basement while I was working on it, and she goes, "What is that for?" And I've been talking about this tea cabinet forever, and she didn't, I don't know if she doesn't pay attention. It's just like, whatever. But she stopped and looked at the panels, and we're like, wow, that's really nice. I was like, thanks, Matt helped me with that.
I was gonna say, did you give me credit?
Absolutely.
But you took your panels home.
Yep.
And you have, what did you work, so what have you been working on with the two?
All right, so here's what I did. I had a sketch. The sketch went to hell pretty quickly.
Oh, because, that's right. Because
we had talked about it, we were texting back and forth, and what ended up happening is what I thought would work in terms of size didn't end up working because I didn't take into account the sides of the drawers to fit the tea packets and their height. So I took all the different tea packet sizes that we have in our house. I laid them out and measured them and thought that they would work. And when I mocked something up with cardboard, It didn't work at all.
Right, and because the drawer dimensions were like basically exactly the same as the tea package.
Right. I did not take into account the spacing and having to put a dado at the bottom of the drawer to slide in. So there was a lot of stuff. So I ended up actually sketching it out. Well, not sketching it out, drawing it out to scale and with the sides 3/8 of an inch, this, that, and the other thing, and actually just measured everything out and got a full size, what would you say, like a slice off the front. So if you're looking at it.
You drew it out, the front of it, full scale.
Yep.
On cardboard or something, right?
I ended up drawing it out on graph paper had it all squared up. And the dimensions came out like almost 14 inches and almost like 7 inches high. Mm-hmm. And it was not proportioned the way I wanted to, but that's what I had to roll with. So just little things I didn't take into account when
change the design. You just made it bigger. You had to make it bigger.
Yeah. It differs from the drawing that I made.
Cause we talked about a lot of different ways because you were unhappy with the size of the drawer front. Yeah. Things
They were more rectangular than square or I guess horizontal. They're more vertical.
Yeah.
So I might make a couple changes there, but I'm not 100% yet. And I might just roll with it. I was kind of pissed at first. could tell from my text, I think. You're like, it's all right. It's all right.
Because one of the things that we talked about, and I sent you pictures of this, was like, okay, so the drawers for a tea packet, the drawers normally are, they come out to be pretty close to square, but they're taller than they are wide.
Correct.
If you have just a single sleeve, so to speak.
Right.
So, you know, I said a way around that was instead of like having just each drawer holds one row of packets, have it hold two.
Right. Double it up.
And then all of a sudden it's wider than it is tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed you, like I sketched out some things like you could do this arrangement, all these different arrangements for drawers.
Yeah, and fronts. I might still, but we'll see because I made a couple mistakes, which I think we'll get into here in a little bit.
Well, if you've already, cut the data, if you've already cut all that stuff.
I thought about it on the way here. So I have one solution that might change something, but other than that.
Because like if you had two drawers and you were to make it one drawer with two sleeves in it.
Right,
so
and you
speak,
have a dado on the bottom.
Well, not just the dado's there, that all of a sudden there's just the space for that divider.
Oh, yeah, you have a big, have a double space basically.
Right, and so you know, you're all of a sudden the drawer is actually wider than you need it to be.
Yep. Exactly. So, thought about that after I fucked everything up.
I think the last thing I said to you is, all right, you're going to work on this at home. He's like, you said, yeah. And I said, all right, just don't screw anything up.
Yep, exactly. And I did. So
you settled on the corner joints you settled on were dovetails.
Yeah. I put a poll up on Instagram for dovetails versus miters. And it was like three quarters
of the people wanted dovetails.
Yeah, dovetails. Yeah, exactly.
Why would you listen to the people?
Did you do? We give the people what they want.
No. No. Did you want to do dovetails? I think the dovetails will look really
good. I think the dovetails will look good. The miters are cool. I think they might get lost. I also think when I drew everything out, I went, screw everything, because it just, my whole plan went out the window and I was like, it's good practice on dovetails and we'll get better at that stuff.
Yeah.
So I've done some nice tight miters before and been okay with that. So I want to get better at the dovetails.
When I was learning to make furniture from this guy, Joe Mazurek, down in Camden, South Carolina, you know, I would design things and make them in his shop. And he would just tell him, give me kind of like this. It was really informal.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would use his machinery and work in a shop, and I would help him deliver furniture as a way to repay him. And
sure.
He would ask me, "Well, why'd you do this or why'd you do that?" And I would always try to like defend it.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
With an argument. And then finally, one time, he said, "Well, why did you do that?" And I said, "Because I wanted to." And he said, "That is the correct answer."
Yeah, no, yeah. And it's the same thing. I learned that in photography. You defend all the mistakes you make. You defend all the things you do. And then one day you go, you know what? That's what I wanted to do. Or I screwed it up. And you just roll with it. So you get over it and do it again another 100,000 times. So it's no big deal.
When I gave him that answer, I finally was like, all of a sudden I was starting to trust my decisions. And now when people ask me, well, why'd you do this or why'd you do that? And they go, because I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it looks good.
And it's mine.
And it's mine.
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's hard. It's hard to get over that first little hump because you're you're very, you consider what everybody thinks about your things because you want it to be nice and you want people to go, oh, that's a great, you know, you don't want them to say it's a great piece of shit. But so it's all a learning experience for me. I don't do this all the time like you. So I'm figuring it out. I'm kind of a perfectionist with some stuff too. So it drives me nuts when I make little mistakes and
making mistakes is painful for sure. All right, so let's talk about dovetails.
Yeah, let's get into it.
How did you cut them? What techniques did you use?
I cut them very carefully.
That's not a technique.
What kind of techniques are you talking about?
How'd you cut the tails?
So I have a guide, and I cut the tails first, and then the pins after.
No, what tools did you use?
Oh, I have a Japanese saw that I use for it, and my chisels, and that's it.
You just cut the tails freehand with a Japanese saw.
Well, I marked them all out.
Yes,
and then I cut them out.
And then did you cope out the waste between the tails?
Yes, I coped out the waste in between, which every time I cut the, I don't know what do you call it, the down side of the dovetail. I don't know what that would be called.
Defining the tails.
Yeah, defining the tails. So I love getting to that part and marking everything out. And then every time I have to cope, I'm like, God damn it, I hate coping these. It's something I just despise doing. I don't know why. But, and then I'll just grind through it, and then I get to pare away the waste down to the baseline and get to that point.
When I learned to make cut dovetails, I learned to chop out the waste between the tails and also in between the pins.
Is that worse?
It's ridiculous. The first time I used a coping saw to get rid of the waste, I was like, holy shit, why have I not been doing this?
What a revelation,
yeah. Yeah, it's like, definitely use a coping saw. So you get down in the kerf. Yep. And you make that turn, you cut out the majority of the waste.
As close as you're comfortable with, I guess.
Well, as close as you can, because the less waste you have to pare out, the better off you are.
Yeah, it saves you time, and it's just a lot better. So when you cut dovetails, do you use like a 90-degree block to pare down once you've gone to your baseline?
No.
Do you just do it by hand?
I do it by hand. So here's something that helps with that. So when you lay out your baseline with a marking gauge, I use a cutting gauge.
Yeah.
And it cuts a crisp, clean line across the fibers, right?
Yeah.
I
wouldn't know about that.
No.
I was telling you about that before the podcast. I had trouble. My marking gauge was not sharp, so it dented the fibers, didn't really like cut anything. So
but if you cut it, like really cut it with a, and I usually take two passes, sometimes three passes, to cut a nice deep line. Yeah. And then before I clean out the waste, I take a chisel and I run it along the baseline that's been marked out on the waste side. And all that waste where you cut, it just pops off.
Yeah.
And you have a really clean shoulder.
Right, okay.
Then you can use that shoulder as a reference point.
To just keep going down.
For removing the waste that, that's on both sides of it. So you know that on the outside face and inside face, that shoulder line is going to be exactly where it needs to be. And you can undercut the inside.
Yeah.
Between, that's fine. So
you go halfway top, you flip it over, do the other half, or you try to go, you pare all the way down.
No, you go halfway in. That way from you each don't side, fuck something up.
Yeah, you fuck up the baseline on the other side. Okay, that's what I did.
We're cussing a lot tonight.
That's all right. I think it's good. It's humid in your house, but it's feeling good. So.
Oh, because we're drinking beer.
What are we drinking?
So this afternoon I went over to a very local brewery for me. It's about 15 minutes from my house. It's over in Waterbury. It's called Brassworks Brewing.
Never heard of it, but it's good.
Yeah, it's good. And we're having I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's an amber ale.
Yeah, it's delicious.
It is good. Very good.
What's the other one you got? The IPA?
It was some kind of IPA, like Double Bird IPA.
Matt does not give a shit about IPAs.
I hate
IPAs. It's all for me.
I like IPAs. So I cut my tails with the bandsaw.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Freehand?
No. So I use
set up a guide?
Yeah, I have a piece of quarter-inch MDF that's like a wedge shape, and the angle of the wedge matches the angle of my dovetails. And so I lay out the dovetails on one end of one piece, the tails.
Yeah.
And then I go over there, and I cut them in... it works out really well because the tails end up perfectly symmetrical, because you make a cut, you flip the board over, and you make a cut on the other side. Then you flip it in for end and do the two cuts, and then you move the fence, and you just go across the board until you have all the tails cut.
So this is an instance where you measure once and cut twice,
right? Cut more than twice. Yeah, well, more than twice. I picked that technique up from a guy named Stephen Hammer when I did an article.
Good name.
He's from New Britain.
New Britain.
Hard-hitting New Britain. Yeah.
Only Connecticut people get that stuff.
He's a cool guy. And he did an article called Half Blind Dovetails in Half the Time. And he cut the tails. I edited that article and did the photography for it. And he cut the tails at the table saw. And at the band saw.
Okay.
And then, you know, like you cope out the waste, and then I pair it, and it's really fast.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing that's faster is having a table saw blade ground to the correct angle.
Yeah.
That leaves a tiny little pyramid or triangle of waste that you can remove with one push of the chisel.
In the corner? No.
No, not in the corner.
Not in the corner. Not in the middle.
Yeah. In the middle.
See, that's some BS. How do you go about marking out your dovetails? That's what I kind of want to know. Because that always, it's not tricky, but I have to think about it for a while to not screw it up and make things.
So laying out the tails is not a big deal. Yeah. I actually do it with a pencil.
But do you use a gauge? Do you use a...
I use a bevel gauge.
Okay.
Yeah, I take a bevel gauge and I set it to the angle of that jig that I use at the bandsaw.
Yep.
And I just set it directly from that thing. Then I go over and, you know, the half pins on either edge are this big. And then
and that's arbitrary? You decide that on what feels good to you?
Well, normally it's at least 3/16 at the narrow side of it. You know, at the baseline.
That's just what you like to do?
Yeah, that's what I like. Yeah. And then I do the spacing, and all of that is sort of on the fly. Like, okay, well, if the two outside tails are 1¾ inches, that's going to leave the tail in the middle to be this big. Does that look right? And so I'll monkey with that until I'm happy with it.
Okay.
And I just do it in pencil because the jig and my fence placement on my bandsaw is really going to determine exactly where things are. Yeah. And they all end up symmetrical and fine. And actually, even if you cut your tails by hand, it doesn't really matter if the angles are perfect or the spacing's perfect.
Because as long as the pin matches it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. With dovetails, the most critical thing is transferring the tails to the pin board.
Yep.
Not the pin board to the tail board, because if you cut pins first, you are a disgrace to humanity. That's really when dovetailing starts, is when you transfer the tails to the pin board. Okay. That's when it starts. And cutting those pins and knowing which side of your layout line to cut on and all that stuff, that's when dovetailing starts.
I have messed that up a few times, even marked it out and still cut on the wrong side. I'm like, damn it, just moving too fast or
yeah. So
being under the influence. No, I don't usually do that, but no, so what's the part of cutting dovetails that you dislike, or a type of dovetail that you stay away from? Cause it's not like, I see blind dovetails on your stuff all the time. What about mitered?
You mean half-blind dovetails?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I hate cutting half-blind dovetails.
You don't want full-blind dovetails. No offense.
No. No. No, that stuff just isn't... You know, like there's hidden mitered dovetails, which would be a full hidden dovetail. Would be sort of mitered too, across the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I use through dovetails, and I use half-blind dovetails.
Yep.
That's what I use. I don't like cutting the pin sockets of half-blind dovetails.
Yeah.
So a lot of times what I'll do, not a lot of times, but often what I'll do is instead of doing half-blind dovetails, I'll make a drawer box that has full dovetails at all four corners.
And then put
a veneer over it. Yeah, like a Shop-Sawn veneer over it. And part of the reason I do that is because it allows me to use...
That's good too.
To use very nice wood for the drawer front, without having to waste really nice lumber.
Gotcha.
You know? Okay. So I do that a lot. So, but yeah, and I've cut other types of dovetails where there's like a miter at the corner so you don't see the dove, you know,
yeah,
crap like that. But for my work, through dovetails for casework is good. And then some version of a half-blind dovetail for drawer fronts.
Okay, so on your little tea cabinet, I noticed you leave, and other stuff that I've seen you working on in your shop, you leave everything a little proud. Now, do you mark your marking gauge a hair? How do you go about doing
that? So I set my marking gauge to be just like a 64th under the thickness of the parts.
Right.
Oh, go back.
Go ahead.
All right. So if I want my... Yeah. So I think that my tea cabinet sides are 3/8 of an inch thick.
Right.
So when I was milling those parts,
yep,
I milled them just over 3/8 of an inch.
Okay.
Hand plane the inside surfaces.
Okay.
And then I set my marking gauge to just to 3/8 of an inch.
Yep.
Using a ruler.
Okay. And so not using the board.
Not using the board, because the board's thicker than 3/8, and I want them to be 3/8 of an inch when I'm done. So I then so set to 3/8. I scribe all my baselines,
uh-huh,
right? And then when I glue everything up, the long grain is proud of the end grain.
Like a 64th or
a 64th.
Thin 64th. Yeah. I mean.
And when often you see people have the end grain proud.
Often people sees? You said it again.
I've been watching the show Letterkenny.
Oh, okay.
And you told me about that. There's a character on Letterkenny named Squirrely Dan's, and he adds S's to everything. And it's just like the way he says, like, you know.
Squirrely Dan or Squirrely Dan's?
Squirrely Dan's.
Okay, perfect.
Squirrely Dan. That way, when I plane the long grain down flush to the end grain, my parts end up exactly 3/8 of an inch thick.
Gotcha.
Also, it makes clamping dovetails easier because you can just like put a normal caul if you need to over the long grain, and it doesn't get affected by the end grain.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, see? So
tricky, sneaky Matt.
I learned that from the... I bought a book about making cutting dovetails by this guy, Ian Kirby, who I met once.
Okay.
Actually, in an airport.
Uh-huh. Oh, in an airport of all places?
Well, he was going to IWF in Atlanta, and I was going to IWF.
Okay.
And I was with my old boss, Tom McKenna, and he recognized... Like, he and Tom know each other.
Okay.
So, I learned that technique from him. And that's what I do all the time now. And it works really great with making drawers, actually, to have the sides. You make that drawer front fit exactly right into the opening.
Yep.
And then you never touch the end grain of it because you just plane down the long grain of the sides and then boom, it fits perfectly. It takes me 5 minutes to fit a drawer after it's glued up.
You might have to show me that when I have to do all these drawers.
You do have to make a lot of drawers. Yeah. So that's how I lay out my dovetails. And
how do you clean them up? You plane outside in. You don't go all the way across, right? When you're planing to clean up your dovetails.
So afterwards,
glued up and everything.
Yeah, I'll hand plane it with a hand plane.
Okay.
Hand planing it with a hand plane.
That's perfect.
Yes. I planes it with a hand plane. Yeah, it's just with a hand plane. And if your hand plane is sharp, you have to be careful with the end grain of the pins or whatever. But a sharp hand plane will actually cut over end grain and not tear it out.
Yeah.
A truly sharp one.
When you can't blow it out on the other side.
Right. When you don't blow it out. So, but I'm just very careful there.
Okay.
Not to blow out the end grain on whether it's the tails or the pins, depending on which boards you're planing down.
So will you sharpen your plane right before doing dovetails and grain on dovetails just to be safe?
Not always, no.
Okay, well that segues right into my problem with cutting dovetails. And I realized I was cutting some dovetails on my tea cabinet on the cherry, and I thought my chisel was sharp enough to go into the baseline and to clean up the corners and everything. And everything was coming out kind of rounded, kind of bending fibers, breaking. And I was like, what in the hell is going on? I thought it was sharp. It was not. I took it to the... I messed up a couple of dovetails. Well, not messed up, but they didn't come out as crisp and clean as I wanted to. I took the chisel.
You mean the shoulder line?
Yeah, the shoulder line. Went and sharpened up the chisel 100 times better. It was kind of one of those... It was, but it was one of those moments where you're like, well, no, it's sharp. What's the problem? And then... I guess going forward, just if I think it needs to be sharpened, it probably should be. So.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, so with a chisel, for example, I never do anything but pair with my chisels.
Yeah.
If you are wailing away on a chisel.
You shave sometimes with a chisel.
I do shave.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll use it on my charcuterie boards.
There you go.
But if you're wailing away on a chisel to get, you know, chop out waste between pins or something, the chisel is going to get dull really fast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why you remove the majority of the waste with a coping saw and then go back and just do light paring.
Yep.
And if you're just doing light paring, chisels last for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah. But you do, I mean, Joe, I'm a little disappointed because I did teach you how to sharpen.
Well, you did. I wasn't being honest. I think I hit, I like tapped it with a hammer, and I think I destroyed the edge.
You tapped the cutting edge with a hammer.
No. Once it was at the baseline, I tapped it to get going, and I was like, and I think it just destroyed the edge. It was really that simple, and I was really disappointed in myself, to be honest with you, Matt. I didn't want to tell you.
What chisels do you have?
It's a shitty Marple. It's fine. It's actually pretty good. Shitty
Marple?
Yeah, but
I think I dated her in high school.
Yeah, that girl. But it tends to...
Round over the edge does?
Yeah, it's kind of soft. I have this really nice Japanese chisel that I've sharpened twice, and it keeps its edge forever. Yeah, so yeah. It's one of those things I think I just have to get used to it. And I bought the Aldi chisels a long time ago, like when I first started this, because there's an Aldi by my house.
Yes.
Those actually keep a really nice edge compared to the Marple. It's 100 times better.
I wonder
better.
Who makes the Aldi chisels. I wonder if it's Narex.
I don't know. I mean, the thing
or
is
two cherries or something.
The
like
finishing
that.
On them is shit. Like one bevel's way off, one's this way, and that, yeah. But the back is pretty decently flat, and it holds a damn nice edge. So.
Does it? Yeah. I've never actually seen of them. I mean, because Aldi's the craziest place in the world. Anyways, we won't get into Aldi. I went to Aldi in Australia. It was really nice. Like, it was
different
like,
than
was,
what you've... What,
well, the
here?
Aldi I go to when I go to one is in Waterbury,
oh, nice.
Connecticut.
Yes.
So already you're talking...
It's a little different level. Yeah. I can see that.
Okay. Waterbury is a...
It's an interesting place.
It's an interesting place. Yeah.
You drive through Waterbury.
You drive through Waterbury. No, it's not that bad.
No, not at all.
Scaryberry.
Oh, is that what it's called? I've never heard that.
That's before. What I call it. It's not a scary place, though. I've never seen the Aldi. Anyways, we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, you have to keep stuff sharp. And you don't, if you don't abuse the edge, it stays sharp for a long time, especially A2 steel.
Yeah.
The usability of A2 steel, usable sharpness is fantastic on A2 steel.
Yeah.
The initial sharpness is not as good as, say, O1 or good Japanese steel or PMV 11 steel.
Yeah.
But the usable sharpness on A2 steel is phenomenal. Just like PMV 11
steel. Is that a majority of what you find in tool steel?
Well, I don't know. I mean... I own a lot of Lee Nielsen and Veritas. Like, all my hand planes are either Lee Nielsen or Veritas.
Okay.
All the blades that are on them are A2.
Okay.
All my chisels are A2 steel.
Gotcha.
And I can get an A2 steel chisel sharp enough that I can pair something and it feels like glass.
Okay.
You know, they do get sharp.
Is that a complaint that they don't get sharp enough?
Well, some people say that, yeah, A2 steel, because of the size of the molecules in A2 steel, it doesn't get as sharp as, say, Japanese steel. Because it has smaller...
Those are the same people that worry about megapixels and cameras and this and that. And the other. Can you do the job? Is it good? Does it look good?
Great. Yeah, and I can sharpen them and just create glass surfaces.
Okay.
So they're fine. But yeah, you have to be sharper. Otherwise, you start to crush fibers, tear fibers out... rather than getting clean cuts.
Right. And then you do everything kind of spirals badly after that too. So like I said, my marking gauge wasn't as sharp as it could have been. And what ended up happening is you dent the fibers instead of cutting them as I'm marking.
Yeah.
And then I screwed up my, what do you call it? The shoulders on the ends there of the dovetails. So I put my chisel into the wrong line and it kind of rounded off the edge because it caught a it goes badly, pretty badly.
Well, so here's something that a lot of people don't think about and you have to think about is that a chisel is a wedge, right? And
yes.
if you have a lot of waste to remove, and that is almost any amount of waste.
Yep.
if you put your chisel right on the baseline of a dovetail shoulder and you push it down in,
it wants to push it.
It's going
to
push backwards because it's a wedge. So that's why you pare away slowly until there's almost no waste left. Nothing to
push back on it.
Yes, and then you go to the baseline. And then you'll get a clean cut, and there won't be anything. You won't push yourself back down past the baseline.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. I've learned that. But you have to kind of do it yourself and screw it up to make sure that you remember it, right?
Well, hopefully if you hear someone say that, you'll remember it.
But well, it's one of those moments where you're doing something, you're like, oh, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know better.
But, yeah, I mean, even for me, I used to do that kind of stuff, but now I know better
because absolutely.
I've cut fuck tons of dovetails.
How long do you think it took you to feel like your dovetails were damn good? Don't tell me, like, 2 days because I'd be – you're full of shit.
The first set of dovetails. I knew. Yeah, I knew. No, I can tell you. So the tool cabinet I made when I was in Joe's shop, the big – have you ever seen the big secretary tool cabinet? I've
seen it before. I don't know if I've seen it in person.
It's down in my I shouldn't say, but it's down in my basement because it doesn't fit in my shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also, I kind of in a way outgrew it.
Yeah.
Because I really need to be able to travel with my tools. Sure. And taking them in and out all the time was a pain in the neck. So I made that traveling tool cabinet that holds everything. But anyways, I could show you the dovetails on that before you leave tonight.
Okay.
That was my first dovetails, my first mortise and tenon joints. Everything was first everything. Yeah. It's a insane piece of furniture. Joe did such a wonderful job teaching me. What were we talking about?
How long did it take you to get good?
I don't know. I mean, it was definitely not until I was at Fine Woodworking.
Okay.
That I started to get good.
What do you think about people practicing dovetails? I kind of.
Yeah, do it.
Do it?
Yeah, sure.
Beforehand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because most people don't woodwork enough to have that muscle memory,
right,
to have that the body mechanics down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just like before you go out for a light jog or something.
You warm up.
Yeah. So kind of practice dovetail or two, you know. Okay. The more that you do it, the better you'll get at it.
Yeah, of course.
But really, my dovetails really started to get good when I think you have to find the technique that speaks to you, that you understand.
Yeah.
Now, I can cut hand-cut dovetails that look great. But the bandsaw thing I really understand that.
Okay.
So they really started to get good when I started to do that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
and then the second thing I wanted to bring up was mistakes and how to recover from them. So I told you this when I first came over.
Yeah.
And I want to know.
I'm going to go get some more.
Yeah. Can I get the IPA when you have a second? Can you hear me? Do you want me to keep talking?
Yeah, keep talking.
All right. So I cut. So you helped me make a jig or a 90 degree, what would you call it? Zero clearance, T-square. A T-square for a router because I have to make dados into the sides and tops and bottoms of my tea cabinet. And you let me borrow a router. You helped me set up a T-square so that I know where the bit and everything is going to hit.
I made you a T-square.
You did, actually. That's probably the only thing I think you've made me so far that I have.
Horny.
All right. There's the joke of the podcast. But I made the T-square. I had everything lined up. What you told me to do was put the two backs to each other or the two backs of whatever parts I'm making dados into.
Yeah, to put the back edges
correct
together.
Back edges together so I make one line all the way across.
Right.
All right. So I marked where I wanted my dados to stop because they're going to be stop dados. Mm-hmm. And then I also marked the with the router so that I know where it would start and then I can line up everything and it works well. Well, I did that, had everything set. I did a practice run with the router to make sure that there wasn't going to be any hiccups, nothing gets caught. And I went ahead and I started to plunge and I went across. And when I went across, I started at the beginning.
You started on the outside
edge. Outside and I went
which
in
was supposed
maybe
to be a stop dado.
Maybe an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch and was like, oh, shit. So I had to start it and move it over. So here's what I ask. Thankfully, it's on my bottom, which is not the continuous grain sides. I have the top and the two sides are all one continuous mm-hmm. grain. Should I remake the piece or do I try to fix
no,
that
no,
little
no,
nick?
No. This is very, very easy to fix. And
Putty? Putty.
Yeah, wood putty and paint. And I will tell you, actually, so I just made this little tool cabinet to hold my joiner plane and three other planes, yeah, right? And I did the exact same thing.
Oh.
On the bottom, because there's this little drawer in one of the corners.
But it faces the front. That's
so does mine. It faces the front.
Okay.
Okay. So here's what you do. First of all, you square up that little mistake, or you just go ahead and make it a through dado. Okay. Okay. Then you glue in a plug.
Okay.
Then, and this is where you're lucky that you did the rip and flip technique. So there's all this straight grain. So just glue on like a 1/8-inch strip that covers the entire front. And then because if you just try to plug it,
you're going to see the plug.
You're going to see the plug and the glue lines. So once you plug it.
But what do I do? Plane it down then? Because I've already cut the dovetails and everything.
Oh. So do this.
Start all over.
Start completely over. Go buy more lumber. No. Yeah. So I would maybe hand plane down the edge, the front edge, like 1/8 of an inch.
Okay.
And then you can glue that strip on and bring it back to the correct. You can actually glue it on and make it, you know, more than 1/8 of an inch.
A little proud and then plane it down.
Hand plane it down to make it so that the board ends up the right way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds great. All right. Well, that was easy. I mean, what other mistakes have you made that you've what did you do on yours, I guess, on your tool cabinet?
Is that
what
you did?
Just the strip and
yeah, I routed in from the front, and it was not supposed to be a through dado. And so then I plugged it and I just glued on a tiny little strip and just but I had not cut my dovetails yet.
Okay. So it was easier to fix that.
Yeah, because from that one. I don't know. You cut your dovetails before you cut your dados.
Yeah, I think that's what you told me to do.
Is it?
I think so.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I have no clue. I'm
pretty sure that's what we said.
Usually
before
that way
everything's lined up.
Usually before I talk to you, I get drunk.
That's about right.
And every time you show up at my house,
I'm
like, who are you?
Like, what are you doing here, boy?
I don't remember you.
Goddamn, get off my lawn.
I saw you on the TV. You were robbing a chicken place.
No. No chicken places.
You was robbing a fried chicken place, boy.
That voicemail you left me about chicken place the other day. I was like, what the hell is going on?
That's right. I called you. What did I do? I said my name was Sergeant.
You were Sergeant something.
Sergeant Dick Slurper.
Oh, you're going to see. You gotta see what you gotta see how it comes up on the voicemail transcript.
Yeah.
It got everything wrong. It got my name wrong. Something slurp. It was terrible. I'll let you read it afterwards.
It was Sergeant Dick Slurper.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it yes, was. It was.
Oh my God.
It certainly was.
That's so sophomoric.
Yes, it is. But that's where we're headed. And yeah. It's perfect. So any other huge mistakes you've made that you had to recover from on a client's piece? Maybe you don't want to talk about it, but anything like that where you're like, ooh, and then you recovered, you're like, damn, that was pretty smooth.
Oh, I've definitely made mistakes on client pieces, for sure. But yeah, I mean, many people say that the difference between like a really good furniture maker and someone who's learning is sure. that really good furniture makers know how to cover up, like correct their mistakes
yeah,
and
yeah.
have it not be noticeable. I mean, I would say actually what makes a really good furniture a good furniture maker is they don't make mistakes in the first place.
They
know?
Minimize their mistakes.
Yeah, minimize yeah, their absolutely. Mistakes. But yeah, there's all kinds of things you can do. Like say if you have your dovetails are just a tiny bit gappy.
Yeah.
Not big gaps.
Yeah.
But a little bit gappy.
From like a dull chisel. Maybe.
From a dull chisel. Yeah. When you get to the surface prep stage and you hand plane things down,
yeah.
put a little shellac over the dovetail and then sand it. And that will fill in those gaps. And because you're filling it in with a cherry or whatever that's from the board. It blends in really well. It looks
Wait
good.
Wait for the shellac to dry?
No. Do it while the shellac's
wet. While it's
wet.
So
wet.
It kind of
yeah.
goops
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So like that's a fix. And
all right.
You know, there are all other... But sometimes you do get mistakes where it's just better just to chuck it and start over.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if I were to like...
Have you hit that point before?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I mean, everyone screws up.
do you salvage the pieces, or do you just, you're just like, it's firewood?
Well, you know, I make tiny little crap. So I just like, it's like 0.25 board feet. So I just chuck it, you know, throw it in the burn pile. But, you know, if I were to really mess up a client's piece, I would just start over, I think.
Yeah, it's different with the clients.
I mean, usually you screw things up, like cutting a dado, like you misplaced the dado.
Yeah.
And there are ways to correct that. And if it were like a misplaced dado that was going to later be hidden by a drawer,
yeah,
I would do a really good patch and then just leave it.
Yeah.
Because no one's ever going to see it.
Yeah.
You know, but if it was something that was going to be on a visible surface, you know, there are ways to correct them. One of the best ways to correct something is what I told you, is to overlay the entire surface with
something else,
with like a veneer basically. Yeah. Yeah. And that covers up the whole thing. And normally you can't really see that.
Okay.
You know,
I have probably a quarter inch off cut from the other side of the board when I put it through the table saw to get it to final width. So I think I might just move that to the front and glue it all on. And I think it should be golden.
Yeah, that'll work.
Damn.
That'll definitely work.
Genius.
Yeah. Well, all right. Thank you. I am.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. What do you want to move on to? I was going to do the three things to know this week.
Are we done? How long have we been talking?
41 minutes.
Should we talk more?
Do people... Hello? Anybody? Do you want to hear more?
Yeah, can I go?
Okay. What do you want to hear about?
Tell us about his childhood.
No, dear God, no.
People love Randy Dingle.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have anything else?
Randy?
Do you have anything that you could bring up? These are not three things to know. This is not the joke.
It's just a story about Randy Dingle?
Yeah, do you have anything off the top of your head?
Oh, man.
That's probably our most commented and questioned about thing that we do.
Yeah, Randy Dingle. Did I mention like the first time he and I drank whiskey?
Oh, I don't know. You might have to start and see where we go with this.
His dad had a bottle of Wild Turkey.
Oh, I've been. Oh, yeah. That stuff's bad.
I mean, they were from Kentucky, and so his dad drank Wild Turkey, and Randy was like, "All I do is take a little capful," and he doesn't know. So we did like a little cap full of a Wild Turkey, and I was like, holy shit, I am never having this again.
How old were you when you had a cap full?
Well, Randy, they moved back to Kentucky at the end of seventh grade.
Oh, wow. So it was before then, huh?
Yeah, it was before then.
Woo.
Yeah. Yeah, my life, most of the problems that I have now probably can be traced back to my friendship. Not with Randy, but because of Randy's dad. So one time, Randy and I were at my house, and we're playing in my bedroom, and we had, you know, Crayola markers.
Yeah, sure.
And we had like a Crayola marker fight, and we were getting Crayola marker all over each other.
Oh God! Don't we all have one of these friends? I had one of these friends growing up. Yeah.
So he goes home, and his mom's like, "What's going? What is up?" And he lied to his mom, and I can't exactly tell you what he said, because if I did, it would reveal his true name. But he said I made a rhyme involving his name, and that I was just drawing markers on him. And
this is while you're there, he's lying.
I was not there.
Oh, okay, all right.
So later in the day, he and I are out on the street that's, you know, that we both live on. And he's riding really fast down the street on his bike. And I'm sitting as he's coming towards me. And his dad had gotten home, and he comes storming out of the house. And I can't remember what he said to me, but he said something to me, like an insult to me. And he said, "Randy, if he ever says something like that to you again, and you don't kick his ass, I'm going to kick your ass." And then he made him go home. And like the next day or whatever, I was like, "Dude, what happened?" And he told me, I was like, "Why did you lie?" And like, you know,
yeah.
His dad, I had this little stuffed man, like a little beanbag man, when I was a little boy. It was like Little Boy Blue or something. And I loved it, right? And I left it in their yard one time, and his dad threw it out.
Oh.
Just threw it out. Who throws out a kid's toy like that? Some freaking weird ass hillbilly. All right. Anyways, that's a couple of Randy Dingle stories.
That's pretty good. I think people will like it.
Yeah.
The more Dingle, the better. All right. So here's I asked to do three things to know this week. My three things to know are about putting in a walkway.
About pudding?
Putting in a walkway.
Putting in a walkway.
Yes, sir. So I put in a walkway going from my driveway to my front door. I built a porch a couple years ago. Well, maybe 3 years ago. And we had to pull out the walkway, which was really crappy anyways. And it's been a long time coming. And I was going to do pavers, didn't do it. Decided on concrete because it's cheaper. Holy crap. That was a lot of work.
So yeah, it is.
Here's my three things. Making concrete forms doesn't count as woodworking.
Wait a minute. You poured a walkway?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you didn't do pavers?
I was going to do pavers, and it was going to cost me like 3-4 times. So making concrete forms doesn't count as woodworking. It's a lot of work. Pay someone to do it, and don't take your vacation to do a walkway. I'm sore as hell. I moved a crap ton of gravel, a crap ton of grass, because I had to pull grass up. It was, I would have rather been working on my tea cabinet, but this is what I promised myself I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I did it while I was sick, mm-hmm. and I rewarded myself with a lot of beers. So
yeah,
it's good.
So you said crap load, right?
Yeah.
So the best man at my wedding, my buddy Keith, we met in ninth grade because we were both riding the after school activity bus home. Like I've been trying baseball. Yeah, he was on the And there was nowhere to sit, and he said, "You can sit next to me if you want to." And we became best friends after that.
That's awesome.
And he lived like a half mile from me. So he got me my first job. He worked at this pizza and grill called The Loop in Jacksonville, which is like a locally owned pizzeria. They made Chicago-style pizza.
Okay.
Fantastic pizza and burgers. And I was a busboy. But so Keith and I both worked there for several years, and I would go back and work there in the summers after my freshman and sophomore year of college.
Yeah.
And we used to have this conversation about how many shitloads were in a buttload. It was like we were trying to determine, like, okay, there's 4 shitloads in a buttload, you know?
Yep.
So anyways.
Did you ever determine that? Or is that kind of like the Tootsie Roll Pop question?
No,
like
we had an answer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had an answer. I don't remember what it was now. But yeah, yeah.
You might have to bring him up.
Yeah, maybe I have to call Keith and see what's going on. I don't mind saying his name because he's awesome.
Because he's good and he's not dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got good stories about Keith too, me and Keith. In high school friends like this guy, Alex.
Oh, nice. Great. Yeah. We'll have to tell those stories another time.
Ugh, Alex is a mess. All right. So you all right. So now we do the statistic.
Stat of the podcast.
Stat of the podcast.
And we'll wrap it up with a joke.
Yeah. 64.37% of all chip carvers are in favor of pocket dogs. Do you know what a pocket dog is?
I can only imagine.
It's what a hot dog that you keep in your pocket and you just pull it out when you're hungry. So when I was growing up, right?
I had pocket cookies.
So growing up, me, Matt, lived in this house. Next door was this kid named Matt Diedrich.
Okay.
And Matt Diedrich and his family, parents were, they were wholesome people, good people.
Uh-huh.
Had a beautiful golden retriever named Nugget. But they were Florida people, mm-hmm. a different sort of Florida people than I am.
Yeah, all right.
His mom would send him out in the summer with a hot dog in his pocket.
Literally.
A hot dog. No bun, just a hot dog. And it would get
chew
like,
on this when
yeah,
you get
when
hungry,
he get hungry, eat the hot dog. Yes. Yeah. So I thought, like, so at the magazine, I would always tell people, you know, about the pocket dog. And I make jokes about the pocket dog, right? And then so there's the show The League. Did you ever watch that?
The League?
The League.
No.
Yeah. Very funny show.
Okay.
And one of the wives of one of the main characters has a cousin named Raffy.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, they start making this pocket dog joke where he's like, all of a sudden he's eating a hot dog on a bun. They're like, where did that come from? He goes, it's a pocket dog. And I'd always called this.
Like, I knew it.
It's like, I always called it a pocket dog. Matt Diedrich always had a pocket dog.
Speaking of Florida, like different Florida people, there's these people 2 houses down from my parents where if you drive by their house, they live in a lake, like an old school community that has a lake there. And now all these people are buying it up and making it nice. Anyways, my parents don't live in the nice ones. But there's a house 2 doors down that has a giant hole in the roof. And the people never repaired it. Instead, they just put a fire pit underneath it. So you can drive by or walk by in the day, and they're like having a fire pit
in their house.
In their house, it is like the weirdest.
That is fantastic. That is amazing.
That's a Florida thing.
That's.
Man.
Your parents live in...
like Orlando area.
Lakeland, right?
No, they live in Orlando.
Oh, Lakeland's area. Lakeland's between Jacksonville and Tallahassee.
Yeah, they live on a little private lake.
Oh,
my God. It's like some of the stuff we see there. Every time I go down there, I'm like, maybe I could move here and be close to family. And then someone drives by, I'm like...
Yeah, no.
And I'm like, nope, not for me.
The funny thing is, like, depending on where you are in the state, the Florida man, they're slightly different, but they're all kind of the same. They're just like these crazy ass.
Yep. A little bit nuts.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyways.
It's Florida. All right. What's the joke?
All right. This joke comes from the boy.
Okay.
He told me this joke. Why do cows have hooves?
Why?
Because they lactose.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. He's a funny kid.
It's a smart guy.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, have fun in Lee Nielsen up in Maine, and I'm going to finish this IPA and then get out of your house and then go mess up another piece of cherry.
And then just like sit in my driveway in your car.
Just sit there for a while. Bye, Matt.
All right, so next time we don't know what we're going to talk about, do we?
Nope. Well, maybe we'll ask the people. You said the people don't care what we talk about, and we don't care what the people think. But
you don't care about what the people think when it comes to your design.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Sorry.
We care about what the people think when it comes to the podcast.
Got it. Understood. Yeah. All right. We'll think of something.
Except we're not going to stop drinking.
No.
We're not going to stop cussing.
Nope. Sorry, guys.
And we are going to tell... bizarre.
More weird jokes, because that's what we do.
And talk about Randy Dingle.
And my best jokes come out when someone sparks a memory for me. I don't usually come up with the spur of the moment stuff. Mm-hmm. But if people want to ask anything about Florida or funny sports stories or people I've met or anything, I'm happy to share. So, anyways.
Yeah.
Right, cool.
Tell us about that time you saw Wilt Chamberlain naked.
We'll save that one for another one.
Okay.
That was bad. All right, guys. See you later.
All right.